The need to retool, to reinvigorate the BBL, to arm it to compete against pop-up competitions elsewhere in January in particular. An international player draft is one of those measures. The head of BBL is Alistair Dobson. Alistair, welcome to the program.
G'day, Jared. Great to speak to you again.
What do you hope the international draft will ultimately achieve?
Well, ultimately, we hope it brings in the best players possible into the BBL from around the world, but equally in a way that adds a lot of profile to the players and a lot of interest in the BBL and speculation and all the things that we've seen in other competitions and leagues around the world that come with something like a draft that just adds such hype and buzz. But ultimately, it's the best players we can get playing in the BBL this season.
How many players are you aiming for? What do you expect the pool to look like come the middle of August?
Yeah, ultimately, there's 24 players that will be drafted. We would be looking for 50 or 60, up to 100 players. There's no limit on the number of players that can nominate. We're communicating with home boards around the world and different player unions and bodies that we can make sure everyone's aware that the draft's on. And the more players we can get in, the more options our clubs will have. Obviously, we're spending a little bit more time on those big-name players and working with agents to answer their questions and make sure they're comfortable going in the draft, and the response so far has been really positive.
Is there a minimum commitment from players, Alistair, times or games, to collect the top dollars?
No, there's not a minimum commitment, Jared. Obviously, the more a player is available, the more likelihood that a club will draft them. That's our message to players and agencies. They can nominate for the availability that suits them at the different bands, but ultimately, it's in their interest to make themselves as available as possible because clubs need to be able to fill their lists and balance their squads to win the games.
Is it a lot of money to commit for a partial commitment in return?
Yeah, I think it's always a balance between the investment in the player and the return you get on the field and off the field. And I think from our perspective, you know, from the profile of the players brings off-field benefit as well as on. But ultimately, it'll be up to our clubs in terms of whether they feel like the value's there to draft a player at a certain level for a certain availability.
The competitiveness, or what happens with the UAE and the South African competitions, are we going to feel comfortable if players almost as mercenaries come in, collect the dollars in Australia and then buzz off to grab more dollars in the next competition before this job is done?
Yeah, we know the players love coming to Australia and playing in the best stadiums in front of the best crowds in the best climate. So they'll come here and play. If they decide to play other competitions in and around the window, that's up to them. I think ultimately for us, it's about the best players we can for the period of time and balancing that with the local stars that have grown through the BBL and hopefully this summer access to all the Australian players at different times through the different windows that are emerging. Obviously, there's a lot of cricket being played around the world these days, and for particularly the growing T20 tournament market, if you like, is big and getting bigger. We're continuing to ensure that we play a really active role in that and that we maintain the BBL's position right at the forefront. It is challenging and there are a lot of moving parts, but ultimately the strength of the BBL still stands up for players.
I'm going to ask a really naive question, Alistair. Is there any way you can get players to buy into the team mission, to the journey of winning the title rather than just being here for a period of time, or is that not international franchise cricket?
Oh, there are certainly some players that are all in when they come to a team. I think every player is a little bit different. A lot of clubs, their list strategy may well be to go for and draft players that are available for the whole competition because that's the culture they want to build or the type of list they want to build. And there'll be other clubs that have a different approach where they want to bring a player in, that they'll do a calculation of how many games do we need to win to make the finals, and the calculation will be, well, if I can get this player for enough games to help me win enough games to make the finals, and that's perhaps the job done. So it'll be fascinating to see how different clubs approach it and how the different approach that individual players take towards their participation.
The availability of Australian test players, Australian national players, so it looks increasingly likely that the South African ODIs aren't going to go ahead. Does that open up a window of opportunity?
Well, there's a window there, we hope, regardless of that, post those ODIs, where we hope the majority of Australian players will be available for a window. If a bigger window opens up, obviously that's only of greater value to the BBL or benefit, but we're certainly working on the assumption those ODIs are on in our scheduling and contracting. But if that changes, I think the BBL's in a good position to take some advantage of that, because we know the players want to play. You know, all the discussions we have with them are that they understand how important the BBL is and how much fun they have when they come and play in it, and they're desperate to find a window of some sort. And whether it's bigger than it currently is now, then we'll wait and see.
So it will be a 5-test summer that will be completed, and then a tour of India will be pending. Do you expect players to be eager for the BBL rather than a break before heading overseas?
Yeah, again, it'll be an individual case-by-case basis. If there's bowlers, you know, fast bowlers that have had a really heavy load during those 5 tests, I think we would understand that they need a rest. If the test series is, you know, finishes early or has some shorter results, maybe that might free them up. But ultimately, the size of that window and when they head off for their next overseas commitments will play a role in that. But, you know, a BBL match is, you know, a T20 game is you know, not as heavy as a test match, obviously. So working closely with our national teams and all our players and clubs to make sure there's everything, we're doing everything we can to get them in.
How do you place those players with BBL teams?
Yeah, I think the contracting model for local players exists. We're encouraging clubs to hold back a spot or two on their list until the BBL schedule and ultimately the international schedule is confirmed or cemented, if you like. And I think at that point we'll speak to clubs about what spots they've got left, what players they might be interested in, and obviously they'll have those conversations with those players, but. As I said, we're encouraging clubs to just hold back filling those last couple of spots until the landscape is even clearer.
Have you made will that facilitate the necessary change that avoids last year's scenario where Steve Smith was eager to play and couldn't?
Yeah, the scenario last summer was a unique moment in time where we had to make some adjustments to the contracting rules to protect us in that COVID environment. One of the, I guess, unintended consequences was that it made it a little bit more difficult for Australian players like Steve to come back and play. That'll go back to the way it was previously, which would allow Steve to play under those scenarios. We know all our clubs are in conversations with that group of players to see what their intentions are.
We're all cricket fans throughout a summer. What have you learnt around your fan base in the study that you commissioned?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time since last season as we come out of COVID really getting clear on our fans and what they want. I think one thing that is really encouraging is the size of the BBL fan base. So the number of people in Australia that love the BBL puts it in the top two or three most popular leagues, you know, in the country. What we do know, though, is after only 10 or 11 years in existence is that a lot of the fans of the BBL are still a little bit more casual, if you like, in the sense that, you know, maybe the BBL is their second or third favourite competition rather than their first. And I think one of the key things we'll focus on and with our clubs and our players is driving that emotional connection so that fans not only love the BBL as that great summer experience, but they fall in love with their clubs and have that really strong emotional connection, which is the next phase of evolution for the BBL and development. So what we are really excited by, encouraged by, is just the sheer number of people that love the BBL and can't wait to get back in the stands this summer.
So this is, I think this is such an interesting notion, is how do you foster fans barracking for a team rather than flicking the cricket on or booking to go to a BBL game? How do you do that?
Yeah, I think on one hand, it's a matter of time in the sense that 10 or 11 years in, you know, compared to perhaps some footy codes that might have, you know, 50, 100 years of generational history where grandparents have passed their love of a team down onto their grandkids and further on. That will happen over time in the Big Bash, and we already see that happening with second, third generation fans of BBL teams now. So our challenge is really to accelerate that, and I think we can't underestimate the impact of the last couple of seasons of little things like players being able to lean over the fence and sign an autograph, which is, you know, BBL players are so amazing at spending an hour after every game just signing every single autograph that a kid in the crowd wants signed. We haven't been able to do that for a couple of years. So little things like that, I think, as we are able to reintroduce those things, will help. Equally, how we start to tell our stories of our players and the stories of our clubs and the drama and the theatre and the heroes and villains that sit around any sporting league, I think, is something that we can do a better job of and create those rivalries and moments, which all add up to reasons to care, I think.
Big picture, Alistair, are you prepared to consider the selling of teams to private investors?
Well, it's a discussion that comes up pretty regularly. There's a lot of clearly a lot of interest from a media and public perspective at the moment on that. I think it's not necessarily for me to comment on that. I know there's lots of discussions that take place. I think that the key thing is to be really clear on what is it that we're trying to solve, and does outside investment help solve that challenge? I think that's the initial question to answer. The BBL in its own right is and continues to be incredibly successful, both from a fan perspective but also commercially, driving great returns for our clubs and our states that ultimately then gets invested back into really important programs to grow cricket. So it's an incredibly strong and successful asset there, I guess, that Australian cricket has. And how that the governance that sits around that is a really interesting question right now. It's managed or run by our state associations in, you know, collaboration with Cricket Australia, and that's how it is for now. But there's interesting discussions that we read about and that we understand are happening.
We'll pick these conversations up as we get closer to the summer, but just notionally, from what are we, the last week of June, this clearly is a pivotal season for the BBL. Is what are your measures of what will represent progress, success, growth?
Yeah, we'll be razor sharp on crowds and attendances this season, Jared, both in the WBBL and the BBL. I think, you know, 2 years of not being able to enjoy that has really hurt us, if you like, in the sense of just the atmosphere and the appeal of the BBL. So that's really our focus with clubs, on getting fans into stadiums, building our big events, obviously bringing the biggest players in that we can, but equally starting to build that longer term objective around emotional connection and engagement with fans that will help hold us in good stead. I think what we've learned is that the casual, if you like, fan of the BBL or of sport has been more impacted by COVID, in the sense that the bigger the size of your casual fan base, perhaps the bigger the impact of COVID, which we've experienced, and we really can't wait to get that back this summer, but also start to build that emotional connection that for our fans to really love and care for their team and their players.
All right, good luck over the next little bit. I'm sure we'll chat again on the way to the international draft.
Thanks, Jared. Great to chat.
Alistair Dobson, the head of BBL at Cricket Australia.